America weekend.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge. My next guest is one of the iconic television stars of the late 70s and early 80s. On January 27th, 1976, Laverne and Shirley debuted on ABC in front of 36 million viewers, making it the number one show on television. She is also known for playing Laurie Henderson in the groundbreaking film American Graffiti, and she just released a terrific book, Shirley, I Jest, A Storied Life. It is quite a pleasure to say hello to Cindy Williams. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Ed, thank you for having me.
This is quite a pleasure. I was 9 years old when Laverne and Shirley hit the air, and every Tuesday night at 8:30, I was in front of my TV watching you.
Yes, and I was only 12 myself. Oh, well, that's quite a compliment. Thank you so, so much.
I read your book over the last couple of nights. It is terrific. It is so much more than just Laverne and Shirley. Tell me why you decided to do it and how the book came about.
Well, about 12 years ago, my collaborator asked me if I was interested in doing a book, and I said, well, I'm not interested in writing a tell-all. I'm only interested in writing something that is fun and anecdotes, fun stories, something upbeat. Dave Smitherman was right along with that. But it's very tough to sell that idea to people because publishers don't think that, you know, anything positive. It's like if you said, oh, I want to do a news show, but only happy news, just happy news that's going on in the world. People laugh you out of the room. And so it took 12 years to finally get publishers to say, okay, all right, we'll do just that book, and you can write it, but we'd like a little bit about your childhood, you know, in your early years and stuff like that, which I had, you know, I was going to try and steer away from. Because I didn't have the greatest childhood in the world, and I didn't want it to be a downer, you know, starting the reader off with that. But I found a way to do it where it was just interesting and not a downer.
You talk about your childhood growing up. You talk about what it was like. You talk about your mom, your dad. You do talk about your dad's drinking issue, but you do it in a way that's very tasteful. You do it in a way that's very uplifting, and you talk about a childhood that is probably very reminiscent to a lot of other childhoods that take place even today and at any time in this country. So the book is very honest as well.
Well, thank you for that, and I tried to stay loyal to that, to being the child of an alcoholic. And, you know, I won't say I cherry-picked, but I did try to pick out things about my childhood that were interesting, you know, and about my father's drinking. I mean, there's nothing interesting about, you know, being 6 years old and having your dad leave you in the cab of his truck when he goes into a bar drinking. But it's certainly got a compelling aspect to it. And when you see the picture of it, you know, I survived it, and I survived it well. And I'm not to say that there aren't shadows. I don't say there aren't shadows that follow me around even to this day. You can never shake that if you're the child of an alcoholic. And you know, and go through a childhood that is wrought with alcoholism. But you can turn around and face it and go, okay, you know, just step aside. That, you know, happened then, and you're okay now. You're on safe ground now, and you love your dad. You just had to fight all his demons. You know, and I talked with my sister before I wrote it, and there were a lot of things she said, you know, you don't want to put that in there.
Right.
That, and I had things in there, and I thought, oh, that's a real downer.
Mm-hmm.
But I still was honest about my father, honest about my childhood, and did stay loyal to being the child of an alcoholic, because every minute of writing that chapter, I was totally aware of all the people out there that, you know, have the same circumstances.
Of course.
And the kids now who do.
It's presented in a very tasteful way, and it sets the stage for the success that your career eventually becomes. Now, we move into the years, your early years as an actress, how you got your start. I remember you said at one point you wanted to be an ER nurse, but you couldn't stand the sight of blood.
That was one of the problems. Yes, Ed. That was a major problem. Our needles And I felt too sorry for the little frog when they, you know, anesthetized him and then dissected him.
That's
true. I just couldn't bear the thought of that. But I also could not pass biology without, in high school, with a higher than a C-minus average.
Mm-hmm.
I had to take it twice.
Really?
In summer school, because the first time around I got a D, and we were taught by this very tough, she had been an ER nurse, she had been a nurse, Mrs. Katzman,
mm-hmm.
and she was tough, and she taught it well, and I did learn some things, but not enough to, I learned enough to know that I would not become a nurse.
So we decide we're going to leave the dissected frog behind, and instead you end up at Los Angeles City College, eventually meeting Gary Marshall. Before Laverne and Shirley comes the groundbreaking film American Graffiti. Now, that film, made on a shoestring budget of $700,000 and by some young filmmaker, some guy named George Lucas. I wonder whatever happened to him. Tell me.
Now, where is he?
I know. Whatever happened to this guy? That had to be some experience for you.
Well, it was. It was for everyone. You know, we just thought we were doing a hot rod movie, and 2 weeks into it, George had us come and see an assemblage of what he had put together, 20-minute assemblage with music. And when we all saw it, when the cast saw it, we knew we were in something that was otherworldly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was and there's no pun intended there, Ed. but it was something very special, and we recognized that. But while we were shooting it, we just thought we were doing kind of this high school, you know, soap opera, hot rod movie. And 2 weeks into it was half of the shooting schedule, because it was all shot in 28 nights.
Right. 28 nights and one morning. Now, the one morning includes shooting one of the most important scenes of the film. That's the drag race towards the end of the film between Paul LaMatt's character and Harrison Ford's character. Now, here's something. If I ever had the chance to talk to you, and now I do, I always wanted to ask this. You're in the car with Harrison. We see the 55 Chevy veer off the road. It rolls over three times. It catches fire. You get out of the car, and through the pure magic of the movies, you only have a smudge on your cheek, a couple of hairs out of place, and a slight pull of the Letterman sweater. It's amazing how those things happen.
Isn't it, though? Yeah, and that was because we had to shoot that. We had about 20 minutes to shoot that, and that was it. That was going to be it. And so we didn't have time to think about it, and because it was left until almost the last day of shooting, and we had been released. Mm-hmm. And I write about this in the book. Ron and I had been released for the day, and we were out of costume, and then the first assistant director came in saying, George wants to shoot the end scene now. And Ron and I looked at each other and said, we're not ready for that. We're not ready. And he said, well, he needs it now, so get back in the costume. So we got back in the costume, ran out there. We all huddled together, and George said, you know, you'll start there. And then I went up to Harrison. That was my starting position. And I said, maybe I'm hitting you with my purse. He goes, yeah, that'll be good, and grabbed my shirt. And that was it. And, I mean, I write about that sort of in detail in that chapter mm-hmm. on American Graffiti. But and it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie that I'm in.
In 1974, you're in a film, one of my favorite films, The Conversation, also a very great movie with Gene Hackman, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. And then, as you're writing with Penny Marshall for Coppola for another project, you get a chance to guest star on Happy Days, and that is something that changes your career forever.
Yep, I guess you could say that.
Yeah, I think so.
Penny and I were writing this it was teams of writers, of comedy writers, for this bicentennial spoof that Francis Coppola was producing called My Country, Tis of Thee, and it was going to be released for the bicentennial. And so Penny and I were two of the writers, and we were writing, and one day her brother called and said, look, I have these two characters on Happy Days. I want you and Cindy to come and play. They're called Laverne and Shirley, and they're two girls who date the fleet. That's what he said. Would you come over, take a week off, and come over and do it? And I needed the money. So we took a week off and went over, and neither one of us, I hadn't seen Happy Days, My sister was an extra on Happy Days. Oh, I didn't put that in the book. I should have.
Really?
Anyway, my sister was an extra, and she had told me how great, you know, this guy Henry Winkler was mm-hmm. and Ron Howard was. And so we played these characters during rehearsal, the first rehearsal, as total down-and-out floozies. I mean, we came on stage smoking cigarettes on the sound stage. Flicked them across the room when we spot Ron and when we spot Richie and Fonzie, and then yell to them. We took pin curls out of our hair, adjusted our underwear, each other's underwear, you know, each other's bras, and then Jerry Paris, who was directing it, he screamed, "Stop, Penny, Cindy! What do you think you're doing? You can't smoke cigarettes." He said, "This is family hour." We had no idea what he was talking about. And so he said, you know, "Enter again." And we entered, and we just chewed gum.
Well, Cindy, stay with us because we're coming up on a break. When we come back, we'll talk about how Laverne and Shirley became a huge television hit. More with Cindy Williams. Stay with us. I'm Ed Kalenge, and this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
Think green. Glad to be with you. Did you know Minnesota recently banned mercury from mascara, eyeliner, and skin lightening creams? All part of a larger ban targeting other sources of mercury, such as thermostats, barometers, industrial switches, and medical devices. Minnesota is now the first state in the country to view public health as a green issue and has expanded the law to toiletries, fragrances, and over-the-counter drugs like eye drops, nasal sprays, hemorrhoid creams, and antiseptics. Mercury, known to retard brain development in children while causing neurological and heart symptoms in adults, is also known for Alzheimer's disease, cancer, and autism. Nowadays, it's a good rule of thumb to start reading labels for you and the ones you love. From the Greeniverse.
Think Green with Harrison at thinkgreenradio.com.
If you're an inventor who would like to attempt to have your idea or invention patented and submitted to industry, call InventHelp. They have free information for you. Call 1-800-405-9878. That's 1-800-405-9878.
Welcome to American Biker Minute, the manufacturer of spark plug wires. Not far from where the wandering biker once had a radio gig, provided an immediate positive effect on ABM's V-twin. Frankly, I was stunned by the difference and how smooth the engine ran. These spark plug wires rock. Today, American Biker Minute.
The Movie Man 6-second review starts now.
Crude, socially unacceptable, and stupidly funny. That Ted is one jacked up teddy bear. But man,
6-second reviews are brought to you by summer's most unapologetic new comedy, Trainwreck, starring Amy Schumer, in theaters July 17th.
Jeff Ryan for American Biker Minute with Sturgis Insight. The old ABM chopper was topped off with an amazing set of big fat Sumacs, 9mm thick spark plug wires. We got a non-assembled set, then we cut them to length for the custom chopper. For most twin cams and metrics, they're already done. Installation pics on the web. Website at AmericanBikerMinute.com. Sumax, SUMAX.com. American Biker Minute. Passport to the open road on two wheels.